Well, prices for cryptocurrencies or cyber cash have been dropping, and many countries, including the U.S., are looking at more regulation. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Today, we'll talk a bit about cyber cash with our computer specialist, Peter Green, back with us. He's a computer consultant with Infostar.com. Stops by every other month, and great to have him back. We'll take a look at what cyber cash is, if it's secure, what new technologies are being created because of it, and get your thoughts about cryptocurrency and your other computer questions as well. You can join in our conversation. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org, or go ahead and post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. And Peter Green, welcome back.
Always great, Larry.
Great to have you with us. First, let's talk about CyberCash. Just basically, what is it?
CyberCash is a form of payment using, you know, a digital process where, you know, there's a buyer and a seller, and, you know, it's exchange of funds.
How did it start?
It's interesting. It's as related to Bitcoin. I believe it was like a cyberpunk, you know, discussion group, and what came up was a concept and proof of concept, you know, design of an open source project to create a digital currency. In this case, Bitcoin. And the person that came up with that, he's no longer actually part of the project. It's sort of like, you know, the rules of cyber currency is like email. You know, there are other programs that do email, but everybody knows what email is. So there's Bitcoin, there's you know, if I pronounce them incorrectly, excuse me, Ethereum, Litecoin, and others that are out there. So it's all based on a blockchain concept of being able to mine the web, the internet, to create this digital currency based on a certain protocol and then assign it value. And, you know, to not go into trying to give people a PhD in this stuff, there are so many resources out there that you can get enlightened with. You know, one of them is, you know, on your smartphone, you could download something called Coinbase, and that keeps track of all the, you know, the popular digital currencies. But what I really wanted to bring to light is the fact that some of the things that happen with your devices have to deal with things like Bitcoin or other cryptocurrency.
So if your phone starts heating up, for example?
Things like that. Phone starts heating up, starts getting slow, starts acting weird. Your computer system starts acting weird. Possibly become part of what's called cryptojacking, which is a, you know, just as serious as something like a virus or a worm or a Trojan, you know, infiltrating your system. It's gotten competitive to mine for coins. You know, the concept behind Bitcoin is that there is a fixed number of calculations and value of Bitcoin each year, and things get halved, and over time you can no longer mine Bitcoin. So that's one thing. So when you consider that, now there's this race to mine the coins because they're going to expire and no longer be available. So it's created this Wild West mentality of, how can I mine these coins? Well, you need the power of devices, the power of the internet, which is a network of computers. So now you've got people out there that are cryptojacking your devices to get more power to try and mine for these coins.
Oh.
And
That's why it may not be your battery that's causing your phone to heat up.
Right. It's being overused for that purpose. So I put a good number of links to sites that explain things like Bitcoin, that talk about crypto jacking, that talk about, you know, security issues and things like that, that are ongoing discussions. And there are, in those articles, you'll see things like no coin mentioned or miner block, you know, which are applications to, you know, basically keep you shielded, or, you know, to sweep your phone so that you're not, you know, using those things. But what's scary to me is because, you know, Bitcoin is used worldwide. Yeah. Some countries are scorning it and saying they're regulating it to a degree. Some are looking at it. Some have, you know, it's just, it crosses all boundaries. But, you know, who's to say that someone couldn't be in a large corporation? You know, we've had these security breaches with Equifax and others out there. And there was just another one that was recently announced with a couple of large store breaches, and that whole thing hasn't come to light yet, where someone working for one of these corporations could put in a backdoor into, you know, a large scale application that people are downloading on their phones or devices or tablets, that now says, you know, and they have the protocol to say, you know, I'm a good person, I'm a good guy, and I'm shielded from, you know, the popular antiviruses because I know how to talk to them. And then at the same time, two-faced, they're, you know, mining for themselves, not for the company, but mining for themselves, you know, digital currency. So, you know, there's a lot of, you know, I'm not feeling good about that stuff.
Well, I tell you what, Monty in La Crosse is a crypto user. Let's go there. Monty, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi there.
Hi.
Yeah, I'd just like to talk a little bit about what the value of Bitcoin, you know, and I'm a amateur investor into Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies. Mm-hmm. And one way to look at it is it's a way to store your money. It's a worldwide network of computers that work together. So people from Korea are putting money in, people from Japan, China, Africa, America.
Right.
And it's just, you can look at it like a bank account. Mm-hmm. That's one perspective on what Bitcoin is. And as far as the Bitcoin mining goes, they're not going to run out of Bitcoin. It's designed so that Bitcoins are released every so often, and they're going to be, they're not going to run out for another 100 years. The rate at which Bitcoins are released is reduced, but as far as supply and demand goes, it's going to increase the value of Bitcoin. I'll just take my comments off the air.
All right. Thanks for calling. Appreciate your call.
Well, the value of Bitcoin, you know, started out at probably just above zero. I believe within the last couple of months it was near $20,000 in value for a Bitcoin, and now it's more of like 7,000. So the people that were holding on to a Bitcoin or several Bitcoins or however many there were, in the last couple of months they lost a significant value. And you know, it's, you know, the value of the dollar goes up and down. The value of the yen goes up and down. The value of Bitcoin goes up and down. But it's a pretty significant change, you know, monetarily. So I think you have to be...
It's scary.
It's scary for a lot of people because a lot of people don't have that kind of money to put into it or to lose. And, you know, there are wallets, cyber wallets, digital wallets, you know, that hold on to Bitcoin securely. The whole concept or the way that Bitcoin works is really pretty elegant. It is, you know, based on a network of computers that, you know, hold the Bitcoin collectively as a group. So it's really something that can't, you know, based on mining and creating new Bitcoins, it can't really be, you know, fraudulently done. It's, you know, the protocol is agreed on by the group. The changes to that protocol can happen, but only if the entire group, you know, agrees, all the users agree that that's, you know, okay to change it. So it's the speculative part that's scary as well. So, you know, one day you're mining for something that's worth 20,000 and, you know, the next day you're mining something that's today worth seven. And who knows, you know, what it's going to be, you know, in 3 months.
Somebody wondered if you could buy Bitcoins without having a cell phone because they they require a confirmation that is sent to a cell.
You know, I personally have not bought any Bitcoins, but I'm sure there's, you know, there's allowances for, you know, making purchases.
Online.
You know, the double authentication method is really popular, and because a lot of people do own cell phones, that's one of the popular ways to do it. And it also, it matters where you're acquiring the Bitcoins from. There are exchanges, and then there are other merchants, you know, that use it that, you know, you can just buy it from them. It's just a matter of which, what method they're using to, you know, to allow that transaction to occur.
Peter Green, our guest today. Peter, a computer consultant with Infostar.com. Always great to have him along. We're talking, started talking today about cryptocurrency, and we can certainly continue with that part of it. But we also, he's also ready to answer your other computer questions as well. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Ideas Network Facebook page. Paul emailed to ask if you could comment on a DNS service by Cloudflare, 1.1.1.1. Is it something that you are familiar with? And if so,
DNS service by Cloudflare.
Yeah. It's called 1.1.1.1.
Have not heard of that.
I don't know anything about it either. So,
well, DNS is domain name service. So whether it's being used for registering a domain name such as, you know, WPR.org, or being a host service for the domain name. You know, I'm not quite sure. I'd have to take a look at that to see. But there are a lot of they're called registrars that allow you to register a domain name.
Yeah.
So the domain name server and service takes your name that you pick. So if it's anywhere.com, there are actually numbers behind that. So it's assigned typically a four-digit number.
Oh, I see.
So it could be like 79.111.222.83.
Right.
And then there's usually a secondary one to back that up. So the hosting company typically has those numbers, and it's in a database. So when you type in all these, you know, .coms, .orgs, .info,
whatever,
anything you can think of, there are actually numbers behind that.
Oh.
And they're all in a database, and then they direct traffic.
Peter Green, our guest today. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our on-air producer here on the Ideas Network. Tomorrow at this time, UW-Madison Band Director Mike LaCrone will be joining us. That's 11 on the Ideas Network. Right now, we're taking a look at your personal computer. We talked a bit about cryptocurrency, but also taking other computer questions with our guest, Peter Green, computer consultant with Infostar.com. And Steve in Lakewood, Florida, has a question for you. Let's go there. Hi, Steven.
Yeah, hi. I have a question about these thumb drive. They're devices that you plug into your computer if you have a slow or dying computer. It's called an extra PC. To find out if they're actually legit, if they really do speed up your computer and how they work.
Well, what kind of computer are you working with? What operating system?
I have I have a Mac.
You have a Mac. I have not used a thumb drive where it would independently speed up a Mac. I know on Windows systems, you know, having that thumb drive in some cases can help give a little bit of a speed boost. I can't quantify that for you, but, you know, that thumb drive based on the computer might have to be fairly significant in size because it's probably trying to cache certain operations. When I say cache, it's trying to put stuff that is commonly being used over and over again into a segment of memory so that it just simply utilizes that space for that specific task rather than redo it over and over again on different spots on the computer. So are you looking at something that's claiming to speed up your Mac?
Yes, it doesn't differentiate between Mac or any other computer.
Okay.
But, yeah, it's just called Extra PC. And I looked at the ad, and, of course, they run a computer that's dying or that's slow on the ad. And, you know, of course, it looks like it would work.
Sure.
But,
yeah. Well, a couple of things. How old's your Mac?
It's about 5 years old.
5 years old. Are you still able to do updates with Apple to bring it to the current operating system?
Yes, I am. Yes.
Okay. Well, that's a good sign. Have you checked for any kind of malware or do you have an antivirus running on your Mac?
Well, I had some issues with it about a year ago, and so I had a tech person that just wiped it clean.
Okay.
And then we rebooted everything, but it still runs slow.
Mm-hmm.
So, I thought I'd try something different.
I know something that I've worked with, Malwarebytes on the Mac, has worked well. You may want to consider downloading that and just, you know, having it scan and see how that if that helps a bit. How much memory?
Could you repeat that again?
Yeah, it's called Malwarebytes, MalwareBytes.
Okay.
What kind of Mac is it?
It's a MacBook Air.
MacBook Air. So is it fixed in terms of upgrading any memory, RAM?
I don't know about that.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know specifically about that, but if there is a RAM upgrade to it, you may want to take a look at that.
Okay.
That may help. You know, as we use computers over time, the applications that we use also evolve, and then they start getting more and more hungry for using the resources on the computer.
Okay.
You know, the other thing is, you know, making sure, you know, if you look at Get Info on your Mac hard drive to make sure that you're not using more than 75% of it. Most people are not, but
right. I don't think I am. No.
Okay.
I don't do any gaming or anything like that.
Sure.
I basically use it for email and correspondence.
Yeah. The other thing is to look at, go to online to a couple of resources like CNET.com, CNET, or PC Mag. Tom's Hardware is another one. And go to those sites and look for reviews on that product and see, you know, what they say about them.
Okay.
They may love them, you know. You may have stumbled on something that's great, or they may say, well, it'll help a little bit, but here are some other things that you might want to consider doing.
Yeah, the things that you suggested, I think, are all good suggestions for somebody that's, their Mac slows down.
Yeah.
Those are...
I also, another thing that I do in terms of file management is I fairly often empty my trash on the Mac because that's occupying space. It's same thing with a recycle bin on a Windows system. You say you don't want it anymore, but you have to say you really don't want it by emptying it, you know, getting rid of it. Because if you just put it in the trash or put it in the recycle bin, it sits
it's still there.
And it's marked for deletion, but it's really still there. So when the computer hard drive spins, And when the computer's looking to give instructions based on an application, if those things are still there, they're like pylons. And it's like, oh, I got to get out. Oh, got to get out of the way. So, you know, if you take care of getting rid of those things, that'll also help as well.
All right.
Okay.
All right. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call.
And for people that are using Macs, if you're not using Time Machine for doing, you know, a backup of your data, you should be. And you can use a thumb drive for that, too.
Kenneth in Janesville would like to know what they use to buy Bitcoin. Do you use your credit card or what? I know credit cards can be used.
You can use real money.
Yeah.
They don't like using things like credit cards, PayPal, because there's in the industry, and it's not just with PayPal, but with credit cards, it's called chargebacks. So, you know, having somebody reverse their half of the transaction, that's kind of scorned on. So, you know, you can buy it with, you know, real money.
Jim in Green Valley, Arizona, your turn now. Hi, Jim.
Morning, Larry. Morning, Peter.
Morning.
I'm having an intermittent problem with a flashing cursor on my Dell Inspiron 5000 series. The computer is about 3 years old. I'm running Windows 10. And on occasion, I'll actually get two cursors on the screen, sometimes what would look like air bubbles in water, kind of messing around on there. And basically, I can't do anything unless I restart the computer. It doesn't happen a lot, but it'll be every day. Sometimes it'll be every other week. You have any idea what might be going on there?
Huh. So is this a desktop system?
No, it's a laptop.
Laptop, okay. Well, a couple of things. Have you contacted Dell at all?
Sure, I did. Of course, they want me to pay for any advice they give me.
Really?
Sure, because it's out of warranty after 1 year.
Oh, okay. Usually, have you done a search on the internet or using Google or your favorite search engine to see if other people are experiencing the same thing?
I have not done that on this particular problem.
Okay. Have you updated the driver for your... it's probably like a slide pad on your... or a glide pad on your laptop? Or are you using a...
Probably not unless it's part of the normal updates. I usually use a wireless mouse, but even if I unplug that wireless mouse, the trackpad still exhibits the same symptom.
Hmm, interesting. Do you have... Is it intermittently coming up like that?
Yes. It'll go days without doing it, and then all of a sudden, I can't get it to stop. You know, I've even had to sometimes remove the battery to shut the darn thing down because the task manager won't even work.
Oh, boy. Hmm. Do you restart your computer every day?
No, I don't, Larry.
I think, for me, I always think that's a good idea because it sort of resets everything.
Yeah, I typically do that. Servers I leave alone, but workstations I like to reboot, start fresh every day.
Yeah, I would.
Okay.
I mean, one thing is, you know, you're saying it's happening with the handheld wireless mouse and with the slide pad on the laptop. So
that's right.
There's some interface problem with the interface between those two devices. So it could be at the system level with the manufacturer. So I would go looking online as related to the model of your computer and what you're experiencing, or what you're experiencing in general, and see what comes up, you know, what you find, because there might be some suggestions in terms of turning something off in Windows that's causing that interaction to happen. There might be, you know, a feature that needs to be shut off because it's running interference, and it's running interference whether or not you're using a mouse or if you're using the slide pad.
Okay.
So, and we've seen that kind of problems where there are interactions with power management and other things for different components, you know, in the computer in terms of talking to the operating system.
Yeah.
I don't think it's like a virus or something, because you haven't alluded to problems with other things that are going on. I think it's possibly a firmware or a hardware interaction with the with your operating system that's causing you grief. It might be turning back the clock on a driver, you know, something like that. But you have to see if there are other people experiencing similar problems.
Yeah.
That would be helpful.
And, you know, the first thing I like to do in the morning is I just restart the computer, just because it seems to eliminate problems I used to have. Every once in a while you get a little glitch or something, and if you restart, it gives the computer a chance to kind of go back and recycle and check things out again and you know, get them in the right place.
Well, think of it as like when you go to school, when we used to go to school and they used an eraser board, usually you start off with a clean board in the morning. Everything's easy to see. By the end of the day, may not necessarily be the case, because the teacher wrote something really close to something that was erased, and I can't quite make out what they're trying to tell me. So then you got to raise your hand, or you don't raise your hand, you go home wondering, what was that?
I restart, then I go get a cup of coffee, and then when I come back, and it's restarted, and there you go.
And it's all good. Yeah.
Thanks, Jim. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Oh, man. Phoebe in Pat next in Madison. Pat and then Phoebe. Let's go to Pat first.
Hi. Okay, so the situation I've been noticing is when I go into my email, it's on a secure, you know, the URL, so it shows a secure connection, and I'll go to an email from a reputable business that I've worked with before, and I'll open that and do whatever and close it, and then before I notice it, I'm working in an unsecure, the URL is no longer got the secure little lock in the S after the HTTP. There's a little mini kind of a italicized I, and it says this is not secure, and I don't know how I fall into that, and I don't know how to prevent it after I, you know, closed that first email and continued on.
What are you using for email? You're using web-based Yahoo.
Yes.
Okay. When you're receiving an email message in a web-based system, you're probably with Yahoo. You're seeing a lot of pictures and so forth. So when you said you have a secure connection.
Yes.
Is it for a bank or a shop that you're working with?
You know? Right. Not a bank usually, but a business.
Okay. Yeah. So are you clicking through that?
I'll open up that message from that, you know, in my inbox. I'll open up that message from that business.
Right. So when you're opening up a message and you're clicking through, you're then going to their site, and some components of their site are secure and others are not. It varies depending upon the website and, you know, what's actually being done. If you're logged on as a user, typically that whole session is going to be secure until you log out. So it may be you could have cookies set on your computer that you inadvertently don't realize that, or maybe you set preferences that when you log into a site that it remembers you so that you're visiting it and you're securely there because you're visiting it from your home computer, not from a public computer or a public place, and that whole session is still secure. But if you are in a public place and you do that, that's not a good thing. So the fact that you're experiencing those things on your home computer when you're visiting them from using a web-based email and you're interacting with sites, some of it's going to be secure and some of it's going to be unsecure. It just depends on, you know, the places that you go to and the things that you're trying to do.
But even within a place itself.
Even within a place itself.
So a business, I don't know, Target or somebody, if you could go to one part of Target and it's secure and another part of Target and it's not secure.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Especially if you're using logins, too.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Yeah. Now on to Phoebe. Thanks for waiting, Phoebe.
Hi, it's actually Dee Dee.
Dee Dee.
When I tuned in, the gentleman was talking about his cursor jumping around on his screen.
Yeah.
And I've had that problem a number of times. And what ended up working, finally I noticed it seemed like it always started happening again after a Windows update. And when those automatically come in, they were putting these uppercase P-U-P, like pup files in there. Malwarebytes, I always run Malwarebytes whenever I'm having a problem. It found those files, pulls them out, and then that problem goes away. I hate when it happens because it takes a long time to do this because I make sure Malwarebytes is updated, but that works every time.
Ah!
That sounds great.
There you go. Thank you, Dee Dee.
Could I ask a couple of questions?
Absolutely. Sure.
Okay, first one is I one time, and that I use every on the Internet.
You broke up there, and we didn't hear the first part of that, Dee Dee.
I've been using CC Cleaner and for years, and I do it every time I come off the Internet. But I've noticed the last... I'm going to say 4 or 5 months. If I update it, for some reason, it stops looking at Internet Explorer cookies and history. It'll say skip. So I'm afraid to update it. And I'm also noticing that it's only taking a small amount. It's only finding a small amount of stuff now. And by the way, I'm running Windows 7 and Windows 10. And where it used to come up sometimes with... an average of 18 to 20 megs to pull out. Now it's only, and sometimes up to 200 if I do my buddy's computer. Now it's only coming up with 3 megs or 9 megs. And sometimes it's like it's not looking at Internet Explorer cookies and history. And I normally use Firefox, so that's some information.
Well, have you looked at the default settings that after you do the update? Maybe they made some changes to that? You know, in terms of what files it's looking at?
They've got the list on the left with the check marks, and they're still checked off in there, but it just says skip. Mm-hmm. And so I'll have to do a reset, restore to a former date on the computer.
You know what you might want to try and uninstall, then a clean reboot, and then download the latest version and install it and see how it behaves after that.
Oh, okay.
And if that doesn't work, then I would probably contact them.
Yeah.
You know, and ask them, you know, why is it seem like it's skipping? But I heard that
the owners changed, that whoever runs with CC Cleaner changed recently, you know, relatively recently.
Right. The other thing is you said you use Firefox, but yet you were talking about Internet Explorer. And
because Internet Explorer is always there. It's always putting stuff on my computer. I wish I could take it off, but one time I tried to disable it, and it said my computer wouldn't work anymore, and it was telling me.
Yeah, you don't want it. Yeah, with Internet Explorer with Windows 7, it's kind of married to the operating system. Wasn't supposed to be, but it kind of is. And with Windows 10, Microsoft came out with Edge to replace Internet Explorer, but it's still there. So you don't really want to get rid of it. You don't want to kind of like digitally cut it out because you might run into some problems with it. It shouldn't really be if you're not using it, really, there shouldn't be anything being created as a result of it not being used. Because when you're if you're on the internet and you're using Firefox or Chrome or Safari, but you're not using Internet Explorer, which is a browser, or Edge, which is a browser, you're not creating any activity. You shouldn't really have any files associated with those two programs to get rid of.
It used to still pull out a whole bunch in cookies and history. Somehow it's doing stuff without my permission.
I have to check that out, because I've never thought, you know, if you're not using, but it is married to the operating system, so I wouldn't, you know, who knows what Big Brother Microsoft is doing, you know, when you listen to things about other companies these days, and then they finally come out and say, hey, you know, we're checking your messages on your phone and other things without your knowledge. Maybe they are browsing on our behalf to create fictitious advertising traffic for, you know, somebody.
Whoever.
I don't know. So I've just never heard of that phenomenon where if you're not using a browser, you know, you shouldn't be creating files associated with it because you're not using it. So I'll have to look into that.
Okay, thank you. And then one last thing, I doubt if you could help me because nobody else can.
Oh, boy.
I bought in the end of December, I bought this Lenovo computer, and it's got 8 gigs of RAM on it and a big terabyte hard drive. And I can't use it because I can't get my favorites into it. And I went online trying to find out how to get my favorites switched over, what file to put them in.
Uh-huh.
And everybody says that when you run Windows 10 updates, sometimes it moves them. I can't even get them in there. Do you happen to know on Windows 10, where do you put your favorites?
In Windows, I can't tell you where you put them, but your favorites are going to be, it's an HTM file. It might be called favorites. It might be called bookmark. There is a folder in your documents that is hidden. See, and here's the other thing that bothers me is it's our data. It's DD. It's your data. It's my data. It's Larry's data, and it's hidden, and it shouldn't be. You know, why is it so difficult for us to find things that are ours, that, you know, we use the computer? So there's a folder under My Documents that you'll have to type in at the top, /app data/, and then there'll be other folders, and those are hidden typically. So you may be able to once you get into there, you might be able to search for it.
What was it again?
Backslash under My Documents. So if you go to Users off of the C drive, go to Users, and then whoever you are as a user. So if you're, you know, John or Jane or DD or Peter as a user, go into Users and then go into My Documents, and then at the very top put in /APPDATA for app data. APPDATA. That's typically hidden. I'm surprised, you know, you might want to do a search online for, you know, what's in my app data, you know, for Windows, and see what comes up on a search. I haven't done that. I'm curious to do that.
Because
I know it's there.
I bought it for my son. I have his favorites files, and I can't give it to him. And when I bought the computer, I got it from Office Max, and I paid for them to do the updates and all that, so it'd be ready to go. And I can't get the favorites in there, so nobody's using the computer. And the 90 days is up and everything.
Yeah, but Microsoft also has I forgot what it's called, but Microsoft also has like an app that you can download to allow you to export out your favorites and then import them back into a new system. I know there's a migration tool for doing that. So you may want to search on that as well.
Okay.
And they're probably going for the app data folder.
There you go.
Anyway, with that cursor thing for the other guy, I've had that problem many times. And what I do is I make sure Malwarebytes is updated. And then I restart the computer and I run Malwarebytes. It finds them. They're PUP, PUP files. So uppercase, it takes them out when you tell them it's okay to take them out, and then the problem goes away.
Dee Dee, thank you so much. Appreciate your call. Peter Green, computer consultant with Infostar.com, our guest. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network. Taking a look at your computer today with Peter Green of Infostar.com. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us. A couple of open lines at 800-642-1234. Email at ideas@wpr.org or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. And let's go to Pam next in Green Bay. Pam, hi. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. My question is about cookies. I've never paid attention to them in the past, but somebody recently told me that it's good for security purposes to delete all cookies every time you close your computer. And I'm calling to find out, is that true? And if so, how do you delete the cookies?
Okay.
Good question. Got a couple of questions back before I answer. What kind of computer are you using?
I've got a Gateway. I'm using Windows 7.
Okay. What do you typically use when you're browsing the web, when you're online?
Internet Explorer.
Internet Explorer.
Or Google. Chrome is a browser.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Good. All right. So the question about cookies, do you do any online shopping?
Yes.
Okay. Do you do online banking as well?
Yes.
Okay. So there's always a little bit of, you know, people say, hey, do this, it's a good idea, but they don't know there's collateral damage as related to that. When I say collateral damage, I mean it changes your experience online, and for some people it may frustrate them because when they first had the computer installed and it was set up, and then, you know, you go online and you do this and you do that and you've been using it for a while and everything's all good. And then you have a talk with a friend or a relative and they're like, hey, you know, have you deleted your cookies? And you're like, no, I have no idea. You know, what are you talking about? And then, you know, it comes up, you know, well, it's a good idea to do it every now and then. So then you go, you find the way to delete the cookies. And all of a sudden, the next time you go to use the computer, it says, how do I log into this site?
No.
You know, for whatever it is, you know, that you're doing. And you're like, I don't know my password. Or, you know, I don't know how to get back in. So before you delete your cookies, make sure you're comfortable with logging in to all the sites that you normally do. If you like advertisement that is being pushed to you, and when I say if you like advertisement that's being pushed to you, for example, let's say you're shopping for a car, or you're shopping for a certain kind of clothes or a brand name, the computer is using cookies to track your user experience, and based on your likes or where you're typically going and what you're looking at, it will put back at you what it feels are ads that pertain to your interests. So again, you know, it affects the user experience. When you delete your cookies, all that stuff goes away and you're starting over again. So that's why I say, you know, it's not only for your benefit, but for others that, you know, are just getting a computer and someone sets it up for them and they're doing all these great things. And then all of a sudden it comes up in a discussion, hey, security wise, get rid of them. Just make sure you know, the places that you go to, you know, you've got your logins and your passwords and so forth, because it is a good idea to get rid of those, clean them up.
You can do them one at a time. You don't have to do them all.
You could do them one at a time. Where do you do them? They're in the browser that you're using. So in Internet Explorer, it's typically under, I think, Options or Preferences. And the same thing with Google Chrome. There's a section for deleting your history and deleting your cookies and so forth. So you just have to look for it. And if you want to take a what I would call like a little lesson on them, you could probably go to like YouTube or Google and, you know, type in, you know, clear or delete cookies for an Internet Explorer, Chrome, or any browser, and you'll probably find video tutorials that will, you know, step you through and show you where, you know, where they are and, you know, and so forth.
Yep. There we go.
Would those tutorials also mention the downside that you were just talking about?
It depends. Some people are pretty good about, you know, not just talking about how to do something, but also, you know,
if you do it, here's what could happen.
Right. But most of the time, you know, the reason they call them cookies, the programmers came up with the term cookies. They deposit a cookie on your system. So when you visit a website, your computer is kind of being tagged that, hey, you know, this person was there and this is their of their interests. So when you come back, I've seen you before and I have a little bit of information to share with you. You may want to, you know, so it's interacting with your computer without you even realizing it.
Interesting. Good luck, Pam. Thank you so much for calling. I want to give Lori in Green Bay a chance to join in. Lori, hi.
Hello. I am not computer savvy at all or tech anything. So I have a phone, an iPhone, and a camera, and a trail camera, and SD cards for the trail camera and the phone. Sometimes I can use with the phone, and I can delete certain photos from my animal camera.
Okay.
But I have some that I can't, and I'm trying to find something very basic, easy to use, hopefully that's not a computer, that I can look at my photos, you know, on a full screen instead of on a phone, and just see how big they are and which ones I want to keep, which ones are kind of distorted, don't want to keep, and I want to be able to, so I want to delete some, but I also want to maybe crop some. So what could I get that's really easy to use that hopefully is not a computer? And I can and that I can plug my camera into or my phone into and delete photos from there too.
You might want to look for, well, it's got to be some kind of computer-based device in terms of, you know, you're you're asking about it to read a disk or read a memory device, and you're wanting to delete files, so it's going to have to reshuffle after it makes the deletion, and you're talking about also possibly cropping it. The thing that comes to my mind that might be the easiest, and you'll have to go looking and searching for this, and probably going online is the best way rather than going to a store, is some kind of tablet that will allow you to plug in the memory card that, you know, the type of memory card that you have. Or if you need a different kind of adapter, you know, to plug in your memory card so that you can call it up on your tablet and do what you need to do. What might be another option is getting, you know, one of those smaller, like, netbooks that might be like a 10 or 11-inch screen that's, you know, a pretty basic computer that might have card readers in it that would allow you to do the same thing.
And I could still plug my phone into that and delete from there and delete.
Sure, because, you have to look for the connections. So you'd have to look for, like, a USB connection, you know, so that you could USB a cable to your phone or, you know, any device. So it typically is going to need some kind of, you know, connectivity. So check and make sure that your phone or your iPhone and the card that you're using have, you know, the ability to plug into those, you know, whether it's a tablet or a little.
And Lori, we have a guest on the show who sometimes comes on and talks about photography and cameras. And he has a website, and he's got a suggestion for a very simple editing device that can be used, and I can't think of it off the top of my head. Jack Socha is his name, S-O-C-H-A, and if you type his name into the computer, he will, for sure, his site will pop up, and then you can go online, and he's got a very simple editing device that can be used.
Okay, great, thank you.
Yeah, cool. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And let's see. Jay in Portage. Hi, Jay.
Yeah, am I on?
Yes.
Yeah, see, I had a question. I'm looking at buying into a VPN service, basically the Nord VPN, N-O-R-D. And it sounds good, but I've kind of looked a little at it, and I see a few skeptical reviews on it, and it almost seems like it's hard to use. I guess before I proceed much farther on that, I guess I'd like the opinion on that type of a service. It sounds good, but again, I'm just coming into it. It looks a little skeptical to me, and I could take my answer off.
Well, what are you trying to use it for? What's the?
Well, my understanding, I guess, is that if you're in with the service, anytime you go somewhere, shopping or anything, everything will run back to their VPN address, and they can't come back into your phone. And all of a sudden you're looking at something, some other thing that you were trying to look at, and you're getting all these advertisements and all these types of things. It just sounds safer to me, I guess.
Yeah. Well, let's ponder that for a bit. Jay, thanks a lot for calling. Peter and I are going to think about that for a minute. And we will take a quick break for a look at the news and weather and find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network. And then we'll be back with Peter, and he'll have hopefully a good answer for Jay here on the Ideas Network. Stay with us. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, taking a look at your computer with Peter Green of Infostar.com. Great to have him along. Thanks so much for listening in. Questions, give a call at 800-642-1234. And Pete, before we broke for news, we had a question from a caller wondering about this VPN service, whether or not it was kind of worth looking at.
Well, the VPN is utilizes what's called a tunnel protocol, so that your connection is a secure connection. And in some cases, they encrypt data going from one point to the other. So if you want an extra level of protection where you want to maintain some of your privacy and be more secure, there are services like Nord and others out there that charge extra for that. So it's an extra level of security.
Typically, with a lot of these places, you can get a week or 2 weeks of free trial.
Try it, see how you like it.
I would, if you're really thinking about doing it, I'd go to that trial first.
That's a great point, because sometimes adding these extra layers on may affect, how things work for you. And, taking that 30 days to, see what the experience is with it. The other thing is reading the reviews. Like the caller said, he saw a couple that, were bad comments as related to it. So sometimes what's good for one is bad for another.
Yeah.
So, take a look at I always recommend to read the reviews, especially when you're looking for a solution. Read the reviews, make notes of what's been said, good and bad, and, weigh... the pros and cons of all of them to see and see how it affects your decision, whether or not it's something good for you or bad for you.
Yeah.
Because there may be a user experience that says, hey, I'm using the same, they don't know it, but they're using the same ISP as you, and because they mention it, and it may be a similar location, and you just like, wow, I'm in that same area, and they're telling me it's great, or they may say it's bad. So, read the reviews and just make note of certain comments and see how it affects your experience. But taking something on a trial basis is always a good thing, if you're not sure.
Pete, at this time of the show, we always have a top 10 list. And what have you got for us today?
So if you go to Infostar.com and go to the top left, if you click on the current top 10, or if you go to the top 10 archives and scroll to today's date, they're all there. The first one is called Envato, ENVATO.com, and it's got an incredible amount of products and services that are used by companies and people to build the World Wide Web. For example, one component of their marketplace is ThemeForest, which has, for people that use WordPress, has almost 41,000 templates for building websites. Wow. And templates are ways to make the web pages look consistently good throughout your entire site. Now, you know, my InfoStar, I haven't updated it. My daughter said, "Dad, don't touch it. It's been around since 1997, which is very early, but it was based on table structure and not based on themes." So number two is called Nextdoor, NEXDOOR.com. And it's a private social network for your neighborhood, and they claim to have over 171,000 neighborhoods across the country that use that. Behance.net, BEHANCE.net, is a showcase for and where to discover creative works, especially those that are using Adobe's digital products like Creative Suite, InDesign, mm-hmm. a whole bunch of things like that. Number four is called iFixit, iFixit.com, and it's the free repair guide for everything written by everyone. And they claim to have almost 38,000 free manuals and over 123,000 posted solutions for almost 11,000 devices. Number five is bitcoin.org. And it's a great place to learn about Bitcoin. I recommend going to their frequently asked questions page, very detailed. Number six is called the-parallax, P-A-R-A-L-L-A-X.com. It is a popular security news resource that includes in-depth special reports on topics and related how-to articles. So, for example, they have a why and how to stop cryptojacking, which I recommend. Darkreading.com is a cybersecurity news resource, and they've got a free newsletter. Number eight is called Risk IQ, which is a company that offers products and services to help try and solve, protect, and deal with digital threat management. How's that for a new term? Digital threat management. So that includes things like phishing, spear phishing, which means like targeted emails or phishing, you know, trying to, you know, get you to, you know, bite on it. They call it malvertising, ransomware, rogue mobile apps, compromised sites, brand abuse, and fake social media accounts, cryptojacking, and a lot more. Number nine is called Fossbytes, and it was started in 2014, based in India. It's a technology news resource reporting on current issues and topics, and they have over 60,000 email subscribers, and I would recommend checking out their viral news webpage. And the last one, again, goes back to Bitcoin, and it's a resource called Block Geeks, and it's an online learning platform that helps anyone learn about blockchain technology and business software, creative skills, and so forth. And if you want to understand more about Bitcoin, go to blockgeeks.com. That'll help you get immersed in the technology.
All that available at infostar.com, yep. That top 10 list. All right, let's go back to the phones. And Harold in Superior up next, then Christine. But Harold, now. Hi, Harold. Thank you for calling.
Well, good afternoon. I've got about a four-hour question here, and so I don't expect you to cover too much, but I've been trying to reinstall Windows or repair Windows, I should say. I don't want to. I just get so angry with if I have to reinstall it. I have two Windows computers, and the one I bought a new monitor, high-end monitor, and I ended up having to put a new power supply and graphics card, and very sophisticated graphics card and all of that. So anyway, I think I screwed up on the drivers for that graphics card, and now no matter how I try to get into Windows, even to reinstall a copy on another hard drive, you know, so I have a new copy of Windows there. I just can't get it done. I've made Windows install USBs and everything imaginable. So what would be one of the first or second things you would be looking at to try to get Windows repaired? And, you know, I've taken out, periodically I take out the graphics card and plug it into the old onboard graphics, and still doesn't circumvent that, so I don't know what's going on.
Okay.
So let me ask you a few questions. Have you cleaned the registry in your system? I mean, does it boot up to Windows, or is it
no.
not?
Oh, gosh, no. If it did, I'd jump for joy.
Okay. Right.
So far, and I get these little round circles that are going around and around, these little dots. And
can you get it in safe
I can't
mode?
Even boot a boot drive.
Can you get it in safe mode? No.
Windows 10 safe mode. Yep. I don't know how you access that from outside.
You have to, when it starts coming up, you have to hit the F8 function key repeatedly, and then it'll give you different boot options.
Oh my gosh! That's yep. wow.
Yeah.
F8 boot mode.
Yep, you just got to keep
that down a few.
Yeah, you got to keep hitting that.
You just click it. Click
yeah,
it,
just
click.
Keep hitting it until, and it'll
like
come
that.
Up with different.
Like you might have heard me do
yeah.
that.
Yep.
Yeah. Like that.
So.
Yeah, I've gone into the CMOS and checked settings. I don't think anything in the CMOS could cause me that much trouble. I have that EFI. I think I have that disabled, and it's one of those things I don't understand well, and I read about. And
yeah, well, get into the safe mode, and then what do you do, Pete?
So here are the things. So get in the safe mode. If you can get in a safe mode, get to a desktop. If you can run a registry cleaner, that's one thing to do. The other thing is to check and see, look at the integrity of the Windows operating system. There are a couple of things. One is called scan now/SFC, so Sam Franklin Charlie, and SCANNOW. You can do a search on it, and there are numerous. Again, there's probably YouTube videos on it and articles about running it. And then there's another one called DISM, command. And you need to use the command prompt. Both of those you need to use the command prompt. But if you're hooked up to the internet, and I believe you can still do it with the safe mode with internet connection, you can run the DISM, and it'll interact with Microsoft's site to check the integrity of your Windows install. And if there are problems found, it will tell you. And if it corrected them, it will tell you. If it didn't correct them, it will tell you.
Yeah.
So those are options. And you can also do a search on the DISM command as well, you know, to do those things. If those things don't work, or I've had that, sometimes, unfortunately, it is the way in which you install the way in which you install devices. So you install the operating system, and then you install the device drivers. Sometimes the order in which these, and the manufacturers don't know this because it hasn't been reported back to them, but I have seen it where you need to install, you know, the order is important, and you don't know it until you do a trial and error, you know, and go through the process of doing it.
But get into that safe mode.
Mm-hmm.
And you can go from there. Good luck, Harold.
Yeah. The reason he commented that is you used to be able to just hit the F8 key and it would jump into the safe mode. But when they went to Windows 10, they shut that off. But if you hit it repeatedly, then it comes up with the options of what would you like to do.
Yeah.
And safe mode is one of them.
Yeah. Why they made it harder, who knows? There you go, Harold. Thank you. Christine and Franklin, it's your turn. Hi, Christine.
Hi. Hello.
Hi.
I have an HP notebook laptop. It's a touchscreen. I use Windows 10. I have McAfee, and it's showing that I have no problem. But I have on my screen, and maybe about 6 months or a year, I'm not even sure when it started, I was getting not those blue spinning circles everybody talks about, but a gray circle that's like 3/4 of an inch diameter. And then sometimes I'd have 2 or 3 when I'd reboot. I have occasionally now been getting a 1-inch square, a black square, but both of those now have a second cursor in them. My problem, and I could use it, you know, but when it opens up with the cursor that's at the top of the screen, and I have, it'll open up where I want to bring up another website, it will just sometimes switch me back to the website it's sitting on. And then I can't, the only way I can stop this is by hitting the power button, which I know you're not supposed to do. Oh, and also my cursor that I do use, the second cursor or whatever, will disappear sometimes. And I will have to shut it off by just hitting the power. Hmm. And I've had people from HP look at it. They mirrored my computer a couple times. They did a bunch of things, but it never stopped it.
Interesting.
And I know that other people have had that gray diameter because they found it on the internet.
What'd they say?
No.
What did they? What were their comments?
Oh,
about?
One said to stop your touch screen, and so I looked up directions on how to do that, and I did it. Didn't matter. Didn't stop it.
Then obviously not the cause of the problem.
No.
Have you, McAfee is a pretty large target. You know, I'm not saying that they're not good. I'm just saying that maybe something possibly infiltrated your system and is causing this kind of, you know, problem to occur. You might want to look at another, you know, product like Malwarebytes and download that and run it on your system to just make sure that you're having something else look at it as a second check, because McAfee is such a large target out there.
Okay.
The other thing is run a registry cleaner and see, you know, if you have, bad registry entries on your system and get rid of those. CCleaner
is that by pressing that F8 repeatedly?
No, that's the safe mode. CCleaner is a popular registry cleaner that you can use for that. The other thing is, you said it's a tablet. You may want to, before doing any of those two things that I just mentioned, is to run the scan now /SFC. So I would recommend doing a search on the internet for, you know, articles as related to running that, or also doing the DISM. Those are both command line. So what you typically do is in Windows, you type in CMD in the search, you know, next to the Windows Start, and then it'll come up with command prompt, and then you'll right mouse click and you'll do run as administrator. And then, but those articles will tell you to do that. And then you're in a DOS window, even though you're in Windows 10. So that's the command, the command line. And then you'll issue the command, the scan now SFC or the DISM, to look at the integrity of your Windows operating system and see if there are some programs that need some you know, refixing or rewriting, you know, for the Windows operating system, because maybe it might be simply a malfunction with the OS that you have on your tablet as related to, you know, your touchscreen and so forth. And then also make sure that all of the manufacturer drivers are updated for your touchscreen as well.
That's another thing to do.
Yep,
for sure. All right, good luck. Thank you so much for calling. And Don in Slinger, your turn. Hi, Don.
Hello.
Hi, what's on your mind, Don?
Hi. I have an overly sensitive mouse on my laptop. And I've been into settings to try and calm it down a little bit or whatever, but this thing will actually self-actuate, like if the cursor is hanging over something in your email, and the last thing you did was delete something, well, it'll delete the next four. Bang, bang, bang. And you didn't touch the thing, so I don't know what's going on.
Have you checked to make sure you got the latest driver installed?
No. The computer's less than a year old, so I didn't do that.
Yeah, I would do that. And, you know, is it a desktop computer or a laptop?
Laptop.
So do you use, like, a wireless mouse with it, or do you have a slide pad?
I've been using the pad.
Using the pad. Wireless mice are like, the cheaper ones, you could probably get them on sale for, I'm guessing, between $5 and $15 just for the mouse. You might want to have one, you know, just to help you troubleshoot this problem. It may be the driver. It may be simply turning off a lot of the options in your system and rebooting it and going back and resetting the options for your mouse. There just might be a bug in, you know, the hardware that you have is related to the operating system. You know, that you said you had it less than a year. You might want to go online with the manufacturer and see, you know, make sure you do have the latest drivers for their system.
Yeah.
Because they may have already noted that there were problems out there.
That can happen pretty quick.
Yep.
Sometimes when you just get it.
Mm-hmm. Lovely.
There you go.
Yeah, well, thanks for your help.
Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And let's see. Kathy and Phillips says that she has Malwarebytes Premium and wonders if she should have her rootkits turned on or not.
If you have the ability to check the rootkit with an antivirus or something like Malwarebytes, which is an antivirus program, I would recommend doing it. Sometimes there are ones that will get on your system and they infected at a very low level, and that's what that rootkit is doing. It's checking for that.
Well, Pete, with that, we are
covered a lot. We covered a lot.
Covered a whole lot today. I want to thank you so much for being with us today. And you're back on June 4th.
Yep. If your phone gets hot, turn it off.
Yeah, if your phone gets hot, turn it off. It may not be your battery, right?
Yep.
It may be those cryptocurrency folks working on you. There you go. Peter Green, our guest today, computer consultant with Infostar.com. Remember, his top 10 list is available at Infostar.com, so you can go there and take a look at some of those. And he had at least three, I think, relating to cryptocurrencies on that list, so worth taking a look at. Tomorrow at this time, UW-Madison band director Mike LaCrone comes by. That's actually at 11 o'clock on the Ideas Network. And then at 11:45, talking with the author of a new book about the Milwaukee Braves and the battle for baseball in Milwaukee. So I hope you can join us for that. It's a really interesting book. In the meantime, thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store.